you, Jeff. My name's Billy. I'm an addict. That's a pretty cool perspective here. Can't see too many people, and so if I had any nervousness, it might help a little. I want to thank the Tri-County Area Unity Retreat for putting this together, and I'd like to thank them once again, all the people that helped put this together, you know. Yeah. And if you're here this weekend and you might see some stuff that you agree with or disagree with, and you know, want to make some complaints, I'd suggest to get on the committee for next year. I tell that from experience, because I used to, you know, oh, look what they did that, and did that, you know, and so someone said, why don't you get on the committee and, you know, voice your opinion, and so didn't matter if it go anywhere, but at least I got to, you know, speak my piece, so. But it takes a lot of sacrifice, and, you know, it takes a lot of egos and personalities and control stuff and all that, and a lot of stuff goes beyond behind the scenes that we don't know about, but, you know, I'm sure there was some stuff going on, but I didn't see it, you know. This has been a great weekend, you know. So, like Jeff had said, I had met him in Montana, and when I met him in January, I went out to a convention, just got on a plane, decided to go to a convention by myself in Virginia. I like to do that stuff once in a while, and I called him up and said, hey, can you make it down for the day? And we hooked up for the day, and he asked me if I could, you know, come down here. And as long as I don't have other prior commitments, I say yes to Narcotics Anonymous. How can I say no to a fellowship that saved my life and continues to save my life and continue to show me a better way to live? Give you a little idea of who I am and where I came from. My using was very simple. First drug I picked up was alcohol, and every drug after that was a drug I was not going to use. Because I would rather put the focus on you than take a look at me. Yeah, I may be drinking. I ain't smoking that pot like them crazy potheads. All right, now I may be drinking and smoking pot, but at least I'm not doing that crack. And so on and so forth, because I would rather take a look at you than take a look at me. And it happened in recovery, too. I'd rather put the focus on you than put the focus on me. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I love this theme, A River of Hope. And I was thinking, it's like, we've all come from the sea of despair, and now we're in the river of hope, you know, like, wow, you know. Get out of that sea of despair and get into the river of hope, you know. Like, what an awesome theme. And by finally making it to Narcotics Anonymous, I found some hope. And I love our message, you know, that an addict, any addict, and I truly believe they put that in for me, because I was ready to, you know, yeah, not me though, you know, but it says any addict, so that means anybody can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. So I stopped using the drugs. The desire, I lost the desire. It comes back from time to time. And a new way to live is a constant thing in my life. I'm always learning a new way to live. And Dot T used to say, if you haven't done it clean, you haven't done it yet. And there's been so many things that I've done before when I was using. But then when I've done them clean, they've been so different. Some were better when I was using, some is not as good. But finally coming to Narcotics Anonymous and seeing all these addicts in recovery, I didn't think I was going to stop. I came here and I was still using. Third tradition said I could be here still using. If you hear using tonight, welcome. Keep coming. But it planted the seed. And I came back because pain had motivated me to seek out Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't know if I was going to stop. I didn't know if I wanted to stop. I just wanted to stop the pain, and it was the pain of hurting other people. I wanted to stop telling my daughter that I was going to see her on a Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock and call her up and say, I'll see you at 2 o'clock. And then call my daughter up and say, I'll see you at 3 o'clock. And call my daughter up and say, I'll see you next week. Dad don't feel good. And that doesn't feel good didn't matter whether I already coughed and whether I was getting high or I was sick. Drugs are more important than that relationship. I wanted to stop stealing from my mother. Even when I said I wasn't going to do it again, I'd want to, how do you stop doing that? How do you stop stealing from the sister that you live with? How do you stop stealing from the nieces and nephews that you live with? How do you stop having suicidal thoughts almost on a daily basis? How do you do that? That's what I wanted to learn in Narcotics Anonymous. And they told me it was going to be some work. So to give you an idea of where I came from, in the second step somewhere, because I can't quote pages and all that shit. I barely remember what I had for lunch. But it says people tend to live a life in what they believe. For the longest time, I believed I was a drug user, going to be a drug user. I was a piece of garbage. I was going to be like that for the rest of my life. Why do anything different? You're no good. You're a screw up. You're always going to be like that. Just live that way. That's what I believe. That's the way I lived. The period of time that I was standing on this corner, like I said, I'm from Winthrop, Massachusetts, and this time I was standing on this corner because got to wait for the deal. Something might happen. Got to be there, you know. So got to be here. Got to be here. And someone came by and said, Billy, give me a ride into Boston. I'll take care of you. Those words got my attention when I was using. They may not, you know, been always true, but they said they were going to take care of me. And I really wanted to believe you. So I said, okay, let's go. So I get in my, my car, because I'm from Boston. It was a car. Yes, I parked the car in Harvard Yard. So we start driving into Boston, and I'm driving my uninsured, illegal sticker vehicle, no front brakes, you know, the nice cars. And we're driving into Boston, and it starts raining out. My windshield wipers don't work. So I grind down the window, and I just stick my head out the window. And I'm doing like 75 miles an hour down the expressway because we got to get there. I'm on a mission. We don't slow down because rain's just an inconvenience right now. So we finally get there, and just as we're coming into the place, and Boston used to have these trolleys there, and they had dug up the street. So as I'm driving, there was a car coming the other way, and it went through a puddle, and it hit me right in the face. And I had all this sand, it was in my mouth, and I just wiped my face off, kept spitting the sand out, and just kept driving. So I'm on a mission. I got to get there. We get the drugs, and we're on the way back, and I told him, I said, Joe, I got to do something, man. I this is insane. I'm getting soaked here, and it's torrential rains, I can't see nothing. And I think addicts are the most creative people in the world. We can do stuff, you know. We just make stuff out of anything. When we need to use, we need to get somewhere, we're creative. So I pull over to the store and I come back out and I had two pieces of string and I tied one to one windshield wiper and one to the other windshield wiper. And I pulled and I say, pull, Joe, and hit pulling. Little by little, you know. We made it home, we got high, and I thought everything was okay. But I found out that eventually the string gets wet and it breaks, so I upgraded to shoelaces because they're a lot more durable. Anytime I got money in my hands, one thought never came into my head. You know, maybe I should buy a windshield wiper motor with this money. My rationalization and justification was it really doesn't rain that much in Boston anyways. I don't need windshield wipers. I'll be all right. I get by with this. That's what I believed. That's the way I lived. What a horrible way to live. What a horrible way to live. So today, like, I believe addicts can have more gratitude and things. I drive a car that has a windshield wipers at work. To me, that means a lot. Because I know what it is to drive something that isn't like that. And even when I was driving that car, I believed that I didn't deserve anything better anyways. You don't deserve anything anyways. So it's an inconvenience. Big deal. I read one time, and this helps me a lot. Don't believe everything you think. That's for my safety and yours. Because my head can tell me some crazy stuff. I can believe some things, but don't believe it all. Now people say, like, oh, the committee goes to work. Up in my head. There's times I have conventions going on in my head. There's a main speaker yelling at me. There's little workshops going on. And because of all that's happening, there's definitely marathon meetings going on. And I got to try to quiet it down and say, listen, And all this stuff that all these committees are going on, it's fear of the future. It's stuff that ain't even happening yet. Oh, this is going to happen. I got to go over there. Then it's going to happen. Oh, my God. Then that happens. Then this is going to happen. I have this scenario of one thing after another. The first thing is yet to happen, but I got 9 things that are going to happen as a result of that first thing. And that's fear. That is total fear. So I come to recovery because recovery tells me the truth, because when all that stuff's happening, that's the disease lying to me. To the point where it'll even lie to me, tell me, you don't need to go to that meeting tonight. Oh, you've been going for a while. Yeah, just one's good. You're all right. Oh, you don't have to do that commitment. You don't need to show up. That newcomer, someone else will talk to them. Don't worry about it. Some crazy stuff go in the head. But I need to be around recovery to know that those are lies. And the disease is trying to isolate me. I had some interesting days of recovery and continue to. But one time, it was early recovery. I had 5 or 6 days clean. And every day, I'm very fortunate in the area I live in, Massachusetts, that you can go to 2 to 3 meetings a day. All Narcotics Anonymous meetings. And I'm not saying that you need to go where you need to go. I go where I need to go. And I'm very fortunate that I have these Narcotics Anonymous meetings that I can go to 2 to 3 a day. And these guys would say to me, come on, we're going out to eat or we're going somewhere. And I always had the yabbats. But I gotta go somewhere. I got to catch a bus. I had no life. And all of a sudden, I got all these things I got to do. And after a while, they realized, because of their own experience, that I was saying these things because of fear. And I didn't know how to socialize. How do you socialize? I need a substance to socialize. Take the substance away. How do I socialize? And I was talking about it earlier. One of my conversations on the street was, I'm looking. Are you looking? That was these straight money. I mean, very short, 2-3 word sentences. There wasn't these long conversations unless you beat me or something, So... So after I kept saying to these guys, I got to catch the bus. And, we'll give you a ride home. Oh, yeah, but I left my cigarettes home. I was still smoking at the time. And, we'll give you some smokes. Oh, yeah, but I don't have any money on me. We'll buy you something to eat. Everything I came up with, they had an answer, And they wore me down with love, because they knew what I was doing. I was trying to isolate myself, and it was totally out of fear that I was doing this. So I go to the restaurant with them. I'm sitting there, and I ordered a bowl of soup. That was it. I barely finished that because, when I was out there using from not eating too much, my stomach was the size of a raisin, I mean, things have changed, but I was just sitting there, and I'm watching these guys eat, and they're having the mozzarella sticks, the appetizers. I mean, food's like flying around the table. I'm sitting there, oh, my God. I haven't been around food in a while. Food wasn't a big thing on the agenda. I didn't wake up one morning saying, I'm going to have a good meal today. Like, as soon as I get that bag of dope, I'm getting a nice steak. That never happened. So I'm sitting there, and I'm saying, these guys, they're going to want something. So I'm going to let them know, how much I appreciated it, too, because, I didn't know these people. And I said, hey, guys, I know everyone that's sitting at this table. And I said, I really appreciate it. And when I get a job and I get some money, I'm going to remember who's sitting at this table. And I want to take you guys out, you know, because I really appreciate what you're doing for me. And, this is really great. And they said, you know, Billy, we really appreciate that gesture, but this is what we'd like you to do. When you get to a point where you got some money in your life and, you know, and you can afford to take some people out to eat, what we'd like you to do is take out a newcomer. Do the same thing that we're doing for you. Because, see, we're already established in life. And what happens is we keep doing this for newcomers. And see, if we do it for a newcomer and you get established, then you do it for a newcomer and that newcomer gets established and they do it for a newcomer and you continuously keep doing that. And that's what we do. We just keep, taking care of each other. So I'm sitting there like a bobblehead dog going, oh, yeah, yeah. In my mind, I'm saying, what the hell are they talking about? Because I, 5-6 days earlier from that, I just came from a world where everybody took school. You know, no, they didn't even take the right score. No, I paid you. No, you didn't. You know, I didn't. So I couldn't get this concept. I couldn't get this concept that they were telling me, because I don't know. This never happened to me that I went out on the street and someone said, Billy, here's 3 bags of dope. And when you get the dope or the money, just give it to somebody else. Oh, all right. You know, and in turn, they'll pass it on to somebody else. And, that's how it works out here. We're just this loving community. But in time, I understood what they talked about. I knew what they were talking about after a while. So I kind of just, went with the flow, And a few days later, I was still living with my sister. She, asked me to leave, but she started to see a change. And sitting at the kitchen table with my sister, and I had 7-8 days clean. And she gets up to go to the bathroom, and she took her pocketbook. And Mr. Recovery at 8 days clean got insulted. She came back from the bathroom and I said, sis, what are you doing? She says, what do you mean? I says, go to the bathroom. You took your pocketbook. I said, I got 8 days clean. She says, well, in 8 days, I've seen a change in you. You're really doing really good. And just keep doing what you're doing because I see a change in you already. But as far as trusting you, I'll let you know when I can trust you. Whoa. So what that told me was trust is something I need to earn from somebody. It ain't something I can tell somebody. Because I look back and trust was a word that had no meaning, no worth while I was using. On the street, trust is a word that's thrown around. This is good, right? Oh, yeah, trust me. You're getting paid Friday. I'm going to meet you in the same... Oh, yeah, trust me, I'll be here. You're coming back in an hour, right? Oh, yeah, trust me, I'll be back in an hour. So I learned that trust was... And the most important part of trust I found is if I can trust myself, then I'm okay. Because it took a long time for other people to trust me, but I knew I could be trusted because I trusted myself. Through the work in Narcotics Anonymous, I got to a point where I could trust myself. And it didn't matter whether people trusted me or not. Of course, I wanted them to, but I knew I was worthy of it and I could be trusted. It was a matter of them coming because I need to allow people to go through their healing process. Because if I hurt somebody, I don't know when you're going to be okay. All I can do is make amends and not do that again, but I need to allow you to go where you need to go. And that was hard, too. I wanted people to feel okay right away, So there came a time in my active addiction where the United States Army made a grave mistake, and they asked me for my services. So I got drafted in 1969, and I ended up in Vietnam. And when I was in Vietnam, I got caught on a drug test. I studied very hard for that test, and I got passed with flying colors. So I was in this detox in Vietnam, and first night we're there, we all weren't sitting there saying, I think think I'm going to stay clean and work on some spirituality and some anger issues while I'm in here, you know. Right away, people are saying, how the hell are we going to get high in here? We're in a locked ward. They took everything. You stripped down naked and you went into a room, put some pajamas on, and went through their process. So the first night, this guy says, you know, somebody told me that if you took a Pall Mall cigarette and you crushed up some aspirins and you took some of the tobacco out and you sucked that up inside, and then you take some toothpaste and you smear it out on the outside, let it sit in the sun, dry up, you can get high. So we laughed at this guy. He said, this guy's nuts. And then we proceeded to get a Pall Mall cigarette, some aspirins, and some toothpaste. Because as nutty as it sounded, we had nothing, and he mentioned something that might work. So I tried it. I got like a sore throat and dizzy, you know, and I said, nah, that's, you can have mine, you know, that's what I was looking for. So I mentioned to these guys, I said, you know, when I was stationed in Germany, I said, this guy told me you can get high smoking ping pong balls. And they laughed. I said, you know, I might give this a try, man. I said, Billy, do what you need to do, buddy. So I go to the rec hall and I steal a couple of ping pong balls. And I wait till like 2 in the morning, you know, one of the nurses didn't make the rounds that you're supposed to. So, you know, we know how to, you know, do things when we can do it sneaky. And I'm sitting there and I'm getting this buzz on this ping pong ball I'm smoking. And I'm kind of gazing off into the ceiling, you know, I'm kind of glazing, you know. So one of the guys come over and he said, hey, Billy, I know I ragged you and called you crazy. Do you mind if I sit in with you? And I said, yeah, man, no problem, man. Little time went by, another guy come over. I know I called you crazy too, man. You mind if I sit in with you? You know, I see something's happening here. So the three of us sat there and smoked a couple of ping pong balls. The next day, I went to the rec hall. I stole 5 ping pong balls. Something's working. So before long, there's 8 of us in a circle. To the point where, like I said, we're very creative. Addicts are very creative, you know. We make pipes out of vegetables and fruits. And you gave us a 2x4 and a cat would make a pipe somehow, you know what I mean? We just get creative. When we need paraphernalia, we get creative. So we make this makeshift pipe, you know, and we're passing it around. And now people are, hey, you both got it. You took another hit. You got back in line. Go, oh, guys. You know, you're going to blow this thing. We got something going here. Take it easy. So the next day I get up bright and early, and I steal the whole box of ping pong balls. And I did that because if I didn't, somebody else would. Something's working, and people know it's working. On the way back to the detox ward, I took 2 out of the box and I stashed them in the sand. Because when it's all said and done, I ain't sharing everything with you. We got to have a little, you know, a little fability at the end, you know. So that night, we're all sitting, same people sitting in the circle, and took the last one out of the box and did it. And I says, hey, guys, that's it. It's no more. Last one. And about 3 or 4 of them looked over at me and says, you're lying. You had to stash something somewhere. I'm telling you, there ain't no more. I gave you everything I got. So I went to the bathroom, the latrine in the army. I went to the bathroom. I come back, and they flipped over my mattress. They took the drawers out of the little dresser, kind of ransacked the room. I come back. They're threatening me. I said, listen, guys, I don't have anything else. So needless to say, I would sneak off and, you know, get a little buzz on, come back, and they would be looking at me. You high? No, man, I'm just tired. You know, you could lie about that stuff. That is just a part of the insanity of the disease of addiction. If you take the substance of ping pong balls out of that story and insert any brand of insanity in there, any substance, that's what it is. Starts out, And it happened to me all along the way. Sometimes I had something or somebody else had something and go, oh, you want this? Oh, no, you're crazy. And I see them getting a little buzz. And now I want to join in with you. And now we're arguing over it. And now I'm stashing some and I'm lying to you and I'm getting high and I say I ain't getting high. And one of the things with smoking the ping pong balls, basically what I was doing was smoking plastic. And what the high was, is I was shutting off the oxygen to my brain. And I was killing brain cells. But that's what the euphoria was. I'm lucky I'm speaking right now, you know what I mean? Like once in a while, two brain cells get together and I can do this. And I would, every night after we smoked, I would get horrible pains in my chest. I could barely breathe. I would get a massive headache like there was a spike going through my head. The next morning, I'd get up and go, wow, that was, whew. But that night, I'd do it again. I'd rather pay the consequence of what that was because I was getting high. If I could change the way I felt, I'll pay the consequence. And a lot of times, I didn't even know what the consequence was. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. When I stole money from my sister that I was living with, I knew she knew that. But it was going to be different. I got to do it. I got to feed myself. I got to get it in me. That self-centeredness, that obsessive compulsive. And people have asked me, going, that ping pong story, did you make that up? I think I'd be sicker if I made it up. I ain't here to tell Mother Goose stories. Then I had a guy, he says, hey, I seen you speak somewhere. He goes, ain't you the guy that smokes golf balls? I said, no, I never got that bad. I love our literature. I don't like to read, but I love our literature. I get the ADD thing. I got to, you know, I read something, and I'm reading it, and I'm thinking about doing the laundry, and I'm reading it, and I'm thinking about driving down the highway. You know, I just, it's tough to focus sometimes. But I love our literature because it's written by addicts for addicts. And one of my favorite paragraphs is 112, and it works how and why. It says, we see that regardless of the presence or absence of material success in our lives, we can be content. We can be happy and fulfilled with or without money, with or without a partner, with or without the approval of others. We've begun to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. Our most heartfelt longings and dreams for our lives are coming true. These priceless gifts are no longer beyond our reach. They are, in fact, the very essence of God's will for us. And that's how I try to live my life. But be trying to, there was so long a time recovery that I judged myself by my material success. I got to have stuff. I need stuff. I got to have stuff. That's what's going to make me feel better. I need a woman in my life. She's going to make me happy. I need a new car. It's going to make me happy. I need an apartment on the ocean. That's going to make me happy. I need a real good paying job. That's going to make me happy. What happened is I had all that stuff and I was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Out of my mind. And I'm saying, why? I got all this stuff. Why ain't I happy? I don't want to get involved in the steps. 12-step program. I wanted nothing to do with it. I like the fellowship. I want to come to dances. I want to go to conventions. I want to go to campouts. I want to go to the meetings, hang out later. I don't want to do any work. Read? Take a look at myself? Instead of looking at you? Oh, look at you. So to read this paragraph, to be okay with or without. You know, be okay with it and be okay without it. In the approval of others, I used to be on a mission. I wanted everyone in Narcotics Anonymous to like me. And I wanted to like everybody in Narcotics Anonymous. I've given that job up. You can have it. I wouldn't suggest taking it. It's a lot of work. It's 24/7, 365 days a year, and you're never going to be satisfied. And the approval of others can get crazy. Because I could go somewhere and I'm holding the door open for somebody. And they don't acknowledge, thank you. This asshole. Sometimes I'll give them the greeting back. You're welcome. I'm driving somewhere and I'm this wonderful, courteous driver. I'm going to go ahead. You can cut in front of me. And I don't get the wave in the rearview mirror. I'll try to race up to him. Yeah, you're welcome. I just want to do those things because I didn't do those things before. I pushed you out of the way to get through a door. I drove around you over a sidewalk. I cut you off. I wasn't kind and courteous. I want to do those things to be okay with me. Whether you acknowledge that or not, it's got nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. I found the wallet. I was clean about, nine years. I called the guy up because I went through his wallet and found his ID, and I checked out all his credit cards and his money. You know, some habits are tough to kick. I didn't take anything, but, you know, I checked out what he had. So I called the guy, and it was right around Christmas time, and he came down, and he says, oh, thank you, man. Oh, this is unbelievable. Oh, thank you. Here, let me give you some money, man. I mean, you know, I says, oh, no. I said, just being able to return it to you is a reward in itself. And I was lying. I went back to work, and I saw the receptionist, and I said, Cecilia, I just found the wallet. Called the guy up. I gave it back to him, didn't take anything, just gave it back to him. I'm an honest guy. I proceeded to tell every coworker, yeah, I just found the wallet. Guy came down. I didn't even take any reward. Honest guy. I started telling people I didn't even know. Yeah, I'll have a ham and cheese sandwich. And oh, by the way, I found a wallet today, and I returned it because I'm an honest guy. Because somebody told me one time that one of the greatest acts of humility is do something nice for somebody and don't tell anybody. Woo, that's tough when you're looking for the approval of others. How the hell am I going to turn this wallet and not tell anybody? I got to let them know how wonderful I am. So that's something I work on all the time. And in that paragraph, it talks about, you know, enjoying our surroundings and the beauty, you know. Myself and my partner Maria come down from Massachusetts, and, you know, we're driving down, and we get on the river, and we're looking, and we're out on the pier tonight watching the sunset, and wow. Says, you know, and we're walking back, and I was going back to the car for a minute, and I'm saying, thank you, God. Look where you brought me now. Look where I am now, you know. Here's this junkie shooting, no good person that couldn't stop, that robbed everybody, that hated themselves, that hated the world. And look where I am now. Look at this. This is unbelievable. I get goosebumps thinking about that. I get to enjoy things like this. I don't know about you, but I never went and copped and said, yeah, give me an 8-ball and a couple of bags of dope. And by the way, did you catch that sunset tonight? Huh? Joey, did you see the reds and the vibrant orange in there? Huh? How about the turning of the leaves today? Did you happen to go up into New Hampshire and watch the turning of the leaves? Was that beautiful? I didn't do that stuff. Decades went by. I didn't even know what was... There was world events happening. That happened? When the hell that happened? That world is so small when I was using. So small. I had a radius about, you know... maybe 2 miles. We ain't going, oh, don't go too far. But now, recovery has just opened up the world. I can go anywhere. Just allows me to do that. It allows me to enjoy that. And it allows me to meet people, you know. Like, when I meet people here, this is my extended NA family. I love to travel. I love to meet people. And Narcotics Anonymous has given me that gift. And I realized that, you know, I was talking about the steps, and I didn't want to do the work. You know,
I just didn't. I fought the steps, and the steps won. Thank God they won, you know, because a good possibility I could have used over that stuff, you know. And I just didn't want to give it up. I'm saying, I'm okay. That was a lie, because denial's so powerful, you know. We're talking today, and I said, you know, I heard that denial was explained one time. You know, you take the letters D-E-N-I-A-L, and don't even notice I am lying. You know, because I'm just lying. It's denial. Oh, no, it's this. Oh, no, you know, it's just denial. And I finally came to a point where I was reaching out and meeting, saying, I'm having a hard time. And like I say, I had all that stuff, you know. I had the nice apartment and the relationship, all that stuff, and miserable. And, you know, and all of a sudden it was like, I don't know if you hear the readings, and all of a sudden some line, you know, you hear the readings over and over again. I need to hear them over and over again. All of a sudden one day, because I guess I was ready to hear it. But when they started reading, you know, how it works, it was like the whole fellowship was talking to me going, Billy, the clue phone is ringing. Pick it up and say hello. You don't have a clue, brother. Just pick it up and say hello. And when that happened, I heard, in, you know, how it works. Billy, do you want what we have to offer? I'm in pain now. I'm in unbelievable pain. I'm going, shit, there's something being offered here. Are you ready to take certain steps, you know, and willing to make the effort? Oh, man, I'm going, wow, am I willing? Yeah, I'm kind of, yeah, either willing or you're not willing. If you're pregnant, you're not pregnant. You're not kind of willing. You are or you're not. And the line that really hit me is, these are the principles that made our recovery possible. I went, wow, there it is. How long have they been saying that? And then the traditions come. You know, and it took me forever to learn how to say autonomous. You know, I mean, anonymity. What the? Ina. But they started reading the same day. They started reading the traditions. And I heard the line. Just as freedom for the individual comes from the 12 steps. I'm going, what? That's where the freedom comes from. Oh. That's it. I want some freedom. I want some freedom from me, from life, from my this prison in my head. I was talking today with Jeffrey and Jackie, and it was awesome talking to them. And Jackie had spoke on, you know, freedom isn't free, and I totally believe that. Any freedom of anything, it isn't free. It just doesn't happen. And if I want freedom from active addiction, I want freedom for myself, I need to do some stuff, you know. Intentions are great, but without following up action, it's just intention. It's kind of thoughts. I've had plenty of intentions sitting on the bar, you know, someday I'm going to do this. And, you know, intentions are wonderful, but without actions, it's just thoughts. And so to have that freedom. And so this guy come up to me and he says, Billy, I know you're struggling with the steps. He says, but I'm going to let you know, there's only one major step. I go, this is the guy I've been looking for. Because I like to do the least and get the most. You know, I'm the shortcut kind of guy. Like, I want to do very little and get a whole bunch of shit. So I says, what is it, Richie? He says, you want to go from self-centered to God-centered. I says, yeah, this is the guy I've been looking for. I go, how do you do that, Richie? He says, through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't want to hear that. The first year in recovery, I wore a hat. And I mean the first year in recovery, I wore a hat. To a dance, to a meeting, to the beach, to a convention, anywhere you saw me, I was wearing a hat. And I removed my hat to show you why I was wearing a hat. I was wearing a hat because if you knew I was bald, you would not like me. That's what my head told me. But what it was is, I didn't accept myself for who I was. I had no self-acceptance. And I finally walked through that fear. And I walked into a meeting, and some people knew exactly what I was doing. Because, you know, people watch, and they're there to, you know, hold your hand and comfort you. And some people are just there to tell you brazenly outward. But, you know, people come up and say, wow, man, you're not wearing the hat.
And I said, yeah, this is really hard. And in that time, when I was wearing that hat, and I wasn't self-accepting, when I had no self-acceptance, I didn't accept you either. When you walked into a room, if you were big, large, small, whatever, I wanted to talk about you. If you were messing around with somebody, if I thought you were messing around with somebody, I'd talk about, hey, heard that so-and-so screwing this one. Hey, I heard this one screwing squirrels, you know, whatever, you know what I mean? I know I let some personal information go there, I guess. But that's what happens is, you know, I don't have that self-acceptance, so I'm gonna headhunt you. And I'm gonna rip you up because I'd rather put the focus on you than look at me. You know? And that was another reason I need to do some work here, you know, like, wow, I'm clean. But I'm just not feeling good, you know. And with that paragraph, you know, from what I read, you know, looking at that, it's all fear-based stuff. I'm not going to be okay unless I have a partner with me, you know. I'm not going to be okay unless I have some, you know, the big TV. I need a nice car. I'm not going to be okay. And then I heard that, you know, I heard it all the time that happiness is an inside job. And all those other things, I mean, I like nice stuff, but all that other stuff just enhances my happiness. It doesn't make me happy. It just, you know, I have to have the happiness to begin with. And that was like, what an awakening. And then I heard, you know, because at one time, too, my faith used to be, I have faith that everything's going to work out just fine. That's my control. That's like, because if it doesn't work out okay, I think, oh, I'm screwed now. But over years of you know, working on things, my faith is that no matter what happens, no matter what the result is, I'm going to be okay. And I heard faith explained as faith is belief without evidence. Because I needed evidence for a long time. Oh, Lord, prove it to me. Show me. Well, sometimes it isn't. You got to have faith. You got to hang in there. It'll happen. And one of the ways that the faith had developed was finally having a sponsor. I had a real bad sponsor for a long time. Didn't believe in the steps, backing off of service work, believed in all material success, degraded me all the time. I was sponsoring myself. I had a sponsor in name. Got a sponsor? I got a sponsor just so people would stop asking me if I had a sponsor. If you want to ask me if I was using the sponsor, then that was a different subject. But I finally came to let's work in the steps and get involved in them. And that's when I found out like there's like three important relationships in my life. And one of them is with a sponsor, because the sponsor is going to guide me through the steps. That's what he's there for. He's going to guide me through the steps. And in that, while he's guiding me through the steps, I'm developing a better relationship with him. While I'm going through the steps, I'm developing a better relationship with God. And as I'm developing a better relationship with God, I'm developing a better relationship with myself. Now I can have relationships with other people. But when I don't have a clue, I don't have a clue. I had no idea what relationships were about. I was a chameleon in relationships. All a woman had to say, I heard a hint that she had some interest in me. Okay, yeah, let's go. You could come up to me and just hold me by my hand and say, hello. Oh, yeah, she wants me. This is going to work. She's holding my arm. I'm already thinking like, all right, we're going to get a divorce in 2 years. She'll get the house. We haven't dated yet, but, you know, I'm divorced already in 2 years. And, you know, because my head goes places. And I was, like I say, I was always a chameleon. I'd be with the women, I'd find out what kind of music they liked. I'd go buy the CD, so when I picked her up, I'd have the CD. Oh, you like this? Oh, I love this music. Fucking beautiful. Couldn't stand the music. But I had to be the chameleon. We know how to be chameleons. We know how to change. Who do you want me to be? I need to get what I need to get. Who do you want me to be? But now I just want to be who I am.
Because what happened is I've been in relationships and I started to be who I was. They started to be who they were. And it wasn't working. And in early recovery, when I went out on a date with women and we started a relationship, it was just, hi, I'm Billy. Hey, you want to go do this? Yeah, all right. We start, you know. What I should have been saying when we first met, I am Billy, and I haven't worked the steps. I don't have a clue who I am. I got character defects up the yin-yang. I have fear, doubts, and insecurities. I'm going to tell you I trust you. I don't trust you. I'm going to tell you I'm not going to change you. I'm going to try to change you. I'm going to tell you that I'm going to change whatever you need me to change. I ain't changing shit. And I'd like to share this with you. I don't think I would have went far on a date if I decided to share all that with somebody. So what I did is I became whoever you wanted me to become. And as a result, they never worked. Surprise, surprise. So I found that I need to be who I am and allow that person to be who they are. And I found out the best way for me in any relationship is I'm going to work on me, they're going to work on them, and together we can work on the relationship. And it works really well from that point. And some of those relationships, they were over, and I was still in them. They're over. Gone. I'm still hanging in there. Oh, yeah, this is great. Don't want to be alone. Yeah, we have sex every 18 weeks. This is good. You know, sex became a real important thing. I had a lot of sex my first year, but I just wanted to have it with another person after a while, you know. So then I was at a workshop, and it really made sense to me, and it was called Let Go or Be Dragged. I want to let go. I'd rather be dragged, you know. Oh, don't wait, wait. You know, when you're being dragged, it's not comfortable. You know, I don't give a shit what it is. When you're being dragged through something, it's not a happy time. But God forbid I should be alone. I put up all the minuses just to put up with the plus. I'm not alone. Oh, I'll never find anybody. I got to stay with this person. And they might have been doing the same thing. I don't know, you know. I was one of the people that said, this program don't work. Never worked the 12 steps, but this program don't work. It's kind of like going to the gym, right, and getting a personal trainer. He's going to put you this program so you can get better. And you go up and you go to the gym and you just look at the personal trainer and you wave to him. And you never do the program. And you go, people going, that gym don't work. I go there, Jesus, almost every day. Just don't work. You see a personal trainer? Yeah, he's there. You do any of the programs they have? Well, there's other people doing it. So it's kind of like going to meetings and seeing other people do the program and saying, why is it working for them, but it ain't working for me? Well, probably if I did some work and I got involved, probably will. So when someone tells me, now, they'll come up to me and go, Billy, I don't know, this program don't work for me. I go, I'll tell you what. Do me a favor. Go through the 12 steps, and at the end of the 12 steps, come back to me and tell me whether it worked or not. How can you tell me something ain't working that you ain't doing? I said, I'm telling you not from experience, because that was my walk cry. It ain't working. Didn't want to do any work, but it ain't working. It was easy for me to justify and rationalize why I shouldn't do it. But on the other side, it's become so much different. I got to watch the clock because I can talk a cat off a tuna boat, I'll tell you. Sometimes I have too much. Sometimes I have too much time on my hands. And I'm watching this commercial, and you've probably seen them. You know, they'll tell you about this medication for a certain symptom, you know. And then they'll tell you the side effects. Holy Jesus. You know, oh, we need to tell you that it may cause, you know, you might bleed out of the ass and your, you know, ball might fall off and, you know, you get severe headaches and possibly die. But, you know, but take this because it's going to help you. So I was sitting down one time saying, you know, it'd be interesting that when I was out on the street and I was going to get some drugs, that the drug dealer said, hey, Bill, I just want to let you know, there could be some side effects to this substance. So here are some of the side effects I wrote down. Because this drug dealer standing in front of me goes, well, I got to let you know that it may cause drowsiness to the point of passing out and waking up in an unfamiliar place with unfamiliar people. It may cause a lack of sleep for days and days and days and days and days. It may cause you to do things that you don't want to do, go places you don't want to go, and be with people you don't want to be with. It may cause severe low self-esteem and extreme self-centeredness. It may cause you to steal from friends and family again and again and again and again and again. It may cause isolation and a distorted view of life. It may cause daily thoughts of suicide. It may cause dishonesty, closed-mindedness, and unwillingness. It may cause lack of personal hygiene and the wearing of clean clothes. It may cause difficulty to look in a mirror. It may cause everything you own to be on sale. It may cause daily episodes of paranoia. It may cause a life of denial and self-hatred. It may cause difficulty with employment. It may cause mental and physical withdrawals. It may cause you to put the use of this substance ahead of the welfare of your family, wife, husband, and children. It may cause homelessness. It may cause a diminishing of the spirit and loss of all hope. It may cause frequent visits to jails and institutions. And it may cause death, both spiritually and physically. And you know, depending where I was at, I might say, nah, that won't happen to me. Give me it anyways. And I'm sure there's so many others, but, you know, that's some of the stuff that happens, you know, and so I wrote that a while ago, and this week I was sitting there going, you know, maybe I should, you know, look at the lighter side now. That what are the side effects of recovery? So the side effects of recovery that I thought of, and there's a lot more, but it may cause you to stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. It may cause hope. It may cause a day clean. It may cause to live and enjoy life without the use of drugs. It may cause finding employment and staying employed. It may cause to be of service to others. It may cause you to pay for things. It may cause you to be reunited with friends and family. It may cause you finding a higher power. It may cause the ability to sleep. It may cause you to stop harming ourselves and others. It may cause you to make amends. It may cause you to have faith. It may cause you to find out who you really are and practice self-love. It may cause you the wearing of clean clothes. It may cause you to become honest with yourself and others. It may cause people to believe in you. It may cause you to believe in yourself. It may cause you to wake up and actually know where you are. It may cause you to forgive both yourself and others. It may cause you to let go. May cause you to get a better perspective on life. May cause you to smell good again. May cause you to become a productive member of society. May cause you to arrest the disease of addiction just for today. May cause you to be responsible. May cause you to surrender. May cause you to go from self-centered to God-centered. May cause you to do things beyond your wildest dreams. And may cause you to have an awakening of the spirit and to be a proud member of Narcotics Anonymous. So that's what I do when I have too much time on my hands. And I found in recovery that sometimes life gets difficult. Recovery offers, you know, day clean, the problems, freedom from active addiction, but life stuff, things happen. And back in 2005, I come home one day and told my wife,
that I just got laid off from work. And our marriage wasn't going well at the time, and she says, I want a divorce. So after I grabbed my head from Stop Spinning, I said, okay, what do we need to do here? 5 months later, my mom died. I had changed careers that year. 55 years old, I decided to change careers because I heard of the things that happened in Narcotics Anonymous. During that time, I never thought of using drugs. The reason being, you told me, don't pick up no matter what. And if you ever want to punctuate something, that's where the period belongs. There's no comma after that. It doesn't say, except when a relationship goes bad and you get a divorce, except when your mom dies, except when you're unemployed or anything. Just don't pick up no matter what. So during that time, people would ask me, how are you doing? I said, I'm doing okay. I'm just not feeling okay. They go, what? I go, I'm doing okay. I'm just not feeling okay. They go, what do you mean by that? I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I got people in my life that love and care about me. I got a roof over my head. I'm pretty much healthy. I'm clean today. I'm doing okay. I'm just not feeling okay. And sometimes they match up that I'm feeling okay and doing okay. Sometimes they don't. Early in recovery, somebody told me, because, you know, when I got clean, all of a sudden, like, oh, my God, I got to do this, and I got to do that, and I got to do that. I'm overwhelming myself. Somebody said, listen, if you have to climb a mountain, don't look at the mountain. Look at the path in front of you and take one step at a time. If you keep taking one step at a time, you're going to get up that path. Before you know it, you're going to be on top of the mountain. If you keep looking at the mountain, you're going to tell yourself, I can't do that, and get overwhelmed. So it happened in early recovery, so why can't it happen years down the road? So I still use that. I still use that. When I come to conventions, and I know I'm coming to a convention, and if I know if I'm going to share, I get cuckoo. I get nuts. I didn't sleep for the 2 days before coming here. I'm like a little kid going to the circus. Oh, I'm going to Maryland. But what happens is anxiety, and I get all nuts. And Maria come down with me, and I was, any little thing she did, I was, oh, what are you doing that for? I am nuts. And what it is, it's fear. It's trying to control something because I'm so cuckoo and I'm trying to control everything around me. And I found out when I get in that place, things get worse. If I think that they're not going the way they should be, it's because I'm not supposed to be doing it anyways. And things get more out of control. It just gets worse. And in recovery, one other thing I thought about, since I'm from Massachusetts, and how we love to do service work in Narcotics Anonymous, and how we can't keep what we have unless we give it away. We have a statesman that was president one time and from Massachusetts, and he made a statement one time that kind of was a famous statement. But I'd like to bring it into NA. And what I'd like to say about NA is, ask not what NA can do for you, ask what you can do for NA. Because I believe, you know, if you got to give it back. And if you don't give it back, it's tough to tag into something that isn't there. And just like my active addiction affected my family, so does in recovery. I've had, you know, family members come to me or whatever, and they, you know, and some of my nieces and nephews that I lived with, they never forget my clean day. They know it. They never forget. And I tortured these people, you know. We were talking earlier about I held them hostage. I drove them nuts, you know. Lucky, you know, it didn't get worse than it did. And one of my nieces gave me this card one time, you know. And in the card, and I you know, take this to heart, and I believe it's, you know, for us addicts. In the card it said, may peace with the past and faith in the future
gently guide you through today. You know, and that's the way I like to live, you know, and because I need peace with the past, you know, and I need to have faith in the future, you know, and that'll, I want to be gently guided through today because I can get crazy with that, you know. So what I'd like to leave you with is may peace with the past and faith in the future gently guide you through today. Peace.